This is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now tuned into Current Sports with me, Al Martin. Happy hump day. That's right, it is Wednesday, September 2nd, and we have a doozy of a show in store for each and every one of our listeners out there. Later on in the hour, we will be chatting with Michigan State football royalty. Heck, you might as well call him college football royalty now, seeing as though he will be inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame in December. Folks, I am talking about the one, the only, Clinton Jones. You do not want to miss that chat, folks. Hold on to your hats there. Later on in the hour, we'll also talk about the Deflategate decision to happen before Friday. Also, we'll break down some Michigan and Michigan State football as we are now just a day away from the start of college gridiron. Can you believe it, folks? Can you believe it? All of that and so much more. Of course, if you want to be a part of our airwaves and weigh in on anything that we discuss here on Current Sports, you know that number. Call 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. But hey, you know what's next. Let's start this party like we always do. Here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners, again, for this September 2nd. Let's start with Michigan football. Michigan coach Jim Harbaugh said Tuesday that he has informed competing quarterbacks Jake Rudock and Shane Morris of his decision on a starter for the Wolverines opener Thursday night at Utah. But Harbaugh won't make a public announcement. He said, quote, they know. We know who's going to start. We know who's going in second or who's going to go in next. I want them both to prepare like they are going to be the starter. I don't know how to make it any more clear than that. So, the Michigan Wolverines know who the starting QB is. We just don't. We'll discuss that in just a sec. The hype for Thursday's Michigan versus Utah football season opener in Salt Lake City is reflected in the secondary ticket market. Rick Ells Stadium seats around 45,000 fans. And the explanation, or I should say the expectation, is that every seat will be filled. According to Ticket.com, U of M versus Utah is the nation's second most expensive game this weekend, with an average ticket price this morning at $389. Wow, that is a lot of money. Todd T.J. Duckett, older brother Tico Duckett, and little John Flowers, all former Knights and then Michigan State football players, were announced as the Spartans' honorary captains for Friday's game between the number 5-ranked MSU football team and Western Michigan. Kickoff, of course, is scheduled for 7 p.m. The Detroit Lions made three more cuts yesterday, waiving wide receiver Andrew Peacock, linebacker Justin Cherokee, and tight end Jacob Maxwell. That puts the Lions at the 75-man roster limit in time for yesterday's 4 p.m. deadline. Peacock spent last year on the Lions practice squad. Cherokee, a former Central Michigan player, signed with the team last month, adding depth to an injury-riddled linebacking corps. Right-hander Justin Verlander threw 6 2/3 innings of strong ball, giving up just 2 earned runs, and Ian Kinsler pounded a 2-run homer as the Tigers held off the Kansas City Royals for a 6-5 win on Tuesday night at Kauffman Stadium. Now, the Royals led, they currently lead in the American League Central, and that lead was cut to 12 games with Minnesota's win over the Chicago White Sox. Justin Verlander gave up 7 hits, walked 1, and struck out 4. All-star reliever Kelvin Herrera and Royals right fielder Alex Rios have been diagnosed with chickenpox, raising concerns that others on the AL Central leaders may have been exposed. Now, team officials said Tuesday that Herrera and Rios likely will miss a couple of weeks after both were sent home from Tampa Bay over the weekend. The bigger concern is whether other players could come down with the highly contagious disease and whether it might affect the postseason. Interesting story there. All right, former running back Lawrence Phillips has been charged with murder in the death of his cellmate at a California prison. Phillips is suspected of killing 37-year-old Damian Soward at Kern Valley State Prison in April. Officials determined Soward was strangled. Ronda Rousey isn't planning on fighting into her 30s, and she thinks a mega fight against Chris Cyborg Justino would definitely provide a sense of finality to her mixed martial arts career. The 28-year-old Rousey appeared on the Joe Rogan Experience podcast on Monday, discussing the future of her already distinguished career. Well, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. You know that number to dial if you have anything that's on your sports noggin. Please call 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and also leave us a comment there. I'll read it live here on the air. Or you can even go to Twitter and tweet me at AlMartinWKR, and I'll read your tweets live here on the air. Without further ado, folks, I do believe it's about that time to start the show. Welcome to the show. That's how you do it right there. That is how it's done. Of course, Hall & Oates, one of my favorite groups of all time. That is their fame track, Adult Education. Actually, I really love the music video to this track as well, folks. But I tell you what, there's many people right here on the campus of Michigan State University getting their education as we speak. I found this track fitting, seeing as though this marks the very first day of classes for Michigan State University students. How about that? Oh, boy. Yeah, I remember that like it was yesterday. Being a freshman at Michigan State. I came to Michigan State in 2008. I graduated in 2012. And, I still, around this time of the year, and it's interesting because I work here on campus, of course. That's where WKAR is located. Covering Michigan State sports, covering the area of Mid-Michigan. But it's so crazy because it just takes me back every single time. I see new students or students in general just heading into class and sitting in different classrooms, getting ready for another semester because that was me not too long ago. So I want to give a shout out to all of the students out there who began classes today. Hopefully you went. Okay, you can't skip the first day. Come on, folks. Come on. Let's be honest here. I mean, hey, I know how those days get, especially, in the winter months. I mean, there were plenty of times I remember waking up in East Acres Hall And, you know, and like, you know, the beginning of November, I would look out my window and see a bunch of snow on the ground and say, yeah, this bed is a bit comfy. I don't think I'm going to class today. I get it. But you can't do that on the first day, okay? Hopefully you guys went out and got your education, all right? And I hope you guys have a fantastic semester. And speaking of fantastic, we have a fantastic show in store for you all today. I'm pretty excited because for the very first time here on our show, we will invite Spartan royalty, and he will be actually inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame. How about that? The College Football Hall of Fame. That's pretty impressive stuff. This December. So that is certainly coming up quickly for him. He was inducted into the Michigan State Athletics Hall of Fame back in 2012. When I talked, I interviewed him briefly during that moment when he was when he was inducted, and I was a reporter actually at WLNS TV6. He's a great guy with so much knowledge. He's been working on that project, that video project, with another Spartan great, another Spartan legend, Gene Washington, and Gene's daughter, Maya Washington, entitled Through the Banks of the Red Cedar, which sort of profiles the Duffy-Daughtry period during a really interesting period of college football in which Duffy recruited, one of the very first coaches to do so, recruited Black players from the South here to the North. So, a very interesting documentary. And if you are on Michigan State's campus or around it next week, Thursday at, I believe, 6 p.m., they will be providing you all with a kind of a private screening, you know, of that film. So, we'll be in the house for that. We plan on bringing that to our airwaves on TV and radio. So, yeah, Clinton Jones will be joining me later on in the hour, folks. You don't want to miss that. Clinton Jones, running back great. He's broken so many records. His name is synonymous with MSU football. So Clinton will join me around the 1:30 mark. And speaking of current sports TV, I want to remind you all that, yes, I am suited and booted right now behind this mic because it's Wednesday. And each and every Wednesday here at our WKAR TV studios, we record current sports TV. And I'm sitting down with a man who was one of the most hard working men in all of college sports, and this is actually now going to be his third year with the football team. But he's the head recruiting coordinator for the MSU football team. And folks, I am talking about Curtis Blackwell. Yes, right, Curtis Blackwell. He's going to be joining me on the TV show. We'll also be highlighting on this week's edition of Current Sports TV, of course, the start of the MSU football season as they open up things on the road against Western Michigan University. You get to hear Coach D's thoughts on the in-state rivalries, you know, as they go and play games like, rivalries, other in-state rivalries other than, of course, U of M. You know, teams like Western and Central and so on and so forth. You get to hear Coach D's thoughts on that. We'll also profile Kirk Cousins, former Michigan State quarterback, who is now the starter, the guy. He's got the keys to the car out in Washington for the Redskins. So we profile Kirk as well this week. We bring in and highlight the sad news of Autumn Bailey, transfer from Marquette for the MSU volleyball team, who was injured in the very first match of the year at Kentucky at the Bluegrass Invitational. And also, Isaac Constance, our fantastic engineer of WKAR's Current Sports, he was out at Williamston to witness that Lansing Eastern and Willie High School football game on Friday night. So you'll get to see footage and post-game coverage of that. So we have a stacked Current Sports TV show for you guys. If you can't show up to this afternoon's taping at 3 p.m. here at our WKAR TV studios, you know that you can catch that episode tomorrow night at 10 p.m. on WKAR TV. I want to right now invite Isaac to the show. And, of course, Isaac has now just begun his sophomore year here at Michigan State University. Isaac, I hope you didn't skip, my man. You went to class, right?
I haven't had it yet. My Monday schedule, because actually this Wednesday counts as a Monday schedule, I guess, because next week's Labor Day and all of that, they decided to switch it around. Mm-hmm. Makes sense. But anyway, my first class isn't actually till 3 today. So right out of the show, go upload it, do all that work, and then jet on over to Baker Hall for class. Actually, a really interesting one today. Soccer and community building in Detroit.
It's soccer. That's the name of the class?
That's the name of the class.
Soccer and community building?
Seminar. Yeah. Wow. It's cool. I mean, I'm not sure. Is there a lot of soccer in Detroit? You know better than I would.
I would not know anything about any soccer community anywhere, Isaac, because I barely follow the sport. I cover, of course, MSU soccer and Lansing United, you know, a little bit here in the area. But as far as the soccer community in the D, I mean, I didn't even know there existed one. I had no idea. I know they do have a minor league soccer team. Couldn't even tell you the name right now.
Detroit City FC.
There you go, Detroit City FC. Yeah, you see I'm struggling right now with this conversation. But so you guys study the soccer community in Detroit and see if it's growing or decreasing? What is that class about?
I guess that's the perks of being an honors college. I've got no idea. All I know is I looked up at the required readings. I was like, sweet, I've already got one of these books. That's perfect. I read this for fun. So
right.
Yeah, soccer community building in Detroit can't be that bad. Hopefully check out the D a little bit and kick around a ball and hopefully four-point it. It sounds like a good class to me.
Okay. Well, I know you're a big soccer fanatic, so hopefully the semester goes well for you. How many credits you taking?
I'm at 19 right now.
Okay. All right. That's a lot of credits. Oh, my gosh. You're going to be one busy dude, Isaac. All right, well, let's begin our first topic of conversation here on Current Sports. And again, you can weigh in by just picking up that phone and dialing 517-355-9527. I want to chat about U of M and, of course, their college football year, which kicks off tomorrow night against Utah. And, of course, tomorrow will mark the start of the Jim Harbaugh era. An exciting time if you are a fan of the maize and blue. An exciting time just if you are just a fan of college football, folks. I mean, Jim Harbaugh making the move from the NFL right here in Ann Arbor now, of course, to coach this squad. And, you know, he has certainly brought a jolt of energy into this this program that I've never seen before. And expectations are pretty high. And I feel as though there are many, and I've gone on the record to say this, I feel as though there are many U of M college football fans out there that, in many regards, many of them have an unrealistic expectation of Jim coming in and automatically making this squad a college football playoff contender. I have gone on the record to say I think it's going to take 2 years, give the man a chance here. And the reason why I want to start the show with U of M is because, you know, I think he made a very interesting strategic move that I have to tip my cap at. I must. Because, you know, all this talk about Michigan and them going, you know, in a submarine, getting away from the media and just focusing on their weaknesses, what they need to improve on, harping on their strengths as well, and just getting better before the start of the season. And, of course, Jim Harbaugh and the squad emerged from that submarine last week as Harbaugh finally addressed the media before the start of the year against Utah tomorrow night. And Michigan coach Jim Harbaugh, he said on Tuesday, actually, that he has informed competing quarterbacks. Again, this was the biggest storyline coming out of the Michigan college football camp was who's going to be behind center. You know, of course, those two quarterbacks competing for that job are Jake Rudock and Shane Morse. And he has, you know, Harbaugh has informed those two quarterbacks, Rudock and Morris, of his decision on a starter for the Wolverines opener tomorrow night at Utah. But Harbaugh won't make a public announcement. Again, to read a brief quote here during his first appearance on the weekly Big Ten coaches teleconference, he said, quote, "They know. We know who's going to start. We know who's going in second or who's going in next. I want them both to prepare like they are going to be the starter. I don't know how to make it any more clear than that." Isaac, I really love this because what Jim Harbaugh is doing is, first off, I think it's strategic because you don't let your competition know who that guy is going to be behind center. You kind of leave you know, a bit of mystery so that Utah can't really prepare or come up with any sort of a game plan for who's going to be that guy. they have to prepare for both, and they can only do that by looking at past footage of both of these quarterbacks. You got to look at what Rudock did at Iowa. You got to look at what Morris did in his brief time as the starter for Michigan last year. They don't have much to go with here. And, you know, now you got to prepare for both of them. And I think that's a really strategic move on the side of Jim Harbaugh and this program, because in sports you want to try to find that leg up no matter what it may be. And at the end of the day, Michigan doesn't owe the media or its fans anything when it comes to naming who that starting quarterback is going to be at the end of the day. It's not a requirement. This is all, I think, a part of strategy, and I really like how Harbaugh came out and said, yeah, you'll find out when we take the field on Thursday night who our guy is. And it's kind of keeping Utah, you know, on its heels, a team that's already favored to win that game against Michigan. We know Utah also beat Michigan last year, a 26-10 beating. And, you know, and Harbaugh just trying to find an edge here, I think. He's leaving something up to mystery here. And you better believe, I mean, one thing I don't question about Jim Harbaugh, and this is rain true when talking about where he's been in his coaching career, whether it be Stanford, whether it be in the NFL with the San Francisco 49ers, he's done a fabulous job wherever he has went. And he's known for really turning around programs. He's in the perfect position to do that here. And in doing that, you're going to have to think outside the box and gain edges mentally as well as not just on the field. And I think this is all a part of that. And I really like the move here. And I think it's going to be, at the end of the day, an entertaining game. Now, if I had to guess who was going to be that guy, I have to say, I mean, Jake Rudock, I think he's got more experience as that guy, as being a starting quarterback, seeing as though he was that out in Iowa. I think Jake may be the guy, but again, we're not seeing these guys on a daily basis. We are not in practice. We're not one of the coaches really evaluating, you know, these guys day in and day out of practice to see who has that edge. I like the move from Jim Harbaugh here because, again, he doesn't owe you and I, or any other media members, or any fan for that matter, the right to know who's going to be the starter come tomorrow night.
And now, travel down 4 hours to Columbus, Ohio. The exact same thing is going on. Urban Meyer doesn't plan to announce his decision until the starting lineups are announced by ESPN, pretty much. Urban Meyer is keeping tight-lipped on the same issue. And it is smart. It doesn't let the other team prepare to the extent that they could have. And you talk about Ohio State. Those are two very different quarterbacks. That's a big advantage for Ohio State. For Michigan, they're not as different. But at the same time, no, every quarterback's got his own favorite receivers, favorite targets, favorite preferences, certain reads that he goes to. So, no, keep the Utah defense on their toes. Don't let them guess anything until actually it's game day and they can see a little bit of the quarterback in game. I think this is a really smart move by Harbaugh. I still think they'll lose. I don't know about you, but I think they'll lose.
Utah beat them last year,
and I think this is a worse Michigan team, actually, even if the coach is better.
You think they're worse this year than they were last year? I don't know.
Yes, I think they'll be better.
I think they will be better this season, just for the fact that Jim Harbaugh is their head coach.
I agree with that.
I think that, you know, looking at, you know, and comparing these two quarterbacks, Morris and Rudock, I mean, you know, Rudock, I mean, again, he's a senior in his first year at Michigan. Morris is a junior. And, you know, he's really been competing, you know, since, you know, he's been at campus out in Ann Arbor. Now, Rudock, again, you talk about experience. I think that's the biggest thing here because he started 25 games at Iowa over the past two seasons, landing at Michigan this summer as a graduate transfer. Morris has started just two games for the Wolverines and completed 14 passes in 40 attempts last year. So I think just from the experience standpoint, I mean, logic would lead you to draw a conclusion that Jake Rudock has the edge and will be the starter. But I've seen crazier things. Who knows, again, what's happening out in camp. But I think, you know, from the outside looking in, Rudock has the more experience. You know, being the starting quarterback at any Division I college football team, I mean, it's tough. It's tough. And there's so many different things you have to deal with when other than just the X's and O's. I mean, the atmosphere and dealing with all that pressure on your shoulders. Rudak has done it more than Morse, and I think that kind of gives him the edge. But not letting your competition know who that guy is going to be coming in, I think, is a mental thing, and I think Jim Harbaugh truly understands that.
Well, all the Wolverine water cooler talk is pointing towards Rudak. That's who everybody is speculating is going to be the starting quarterback, because when you look at the advantages that Morse might have, it would be having started for Michigan before, having played for Michigan before. But that's irrelevant. It's an entirely new system under Harbaugh. So Rudak and Morse are on equal level when it comes out to who's the better quarterback. And from what we've seen, it's probably Rudak. So, yeah, I'm assuming that Rudak's going to start. I think he'll have a pretty good showing. But this Utah pass rush, last year they were first in the NCAA.
First in the nation,
with
yep.
55 sacks. 55. That's insane. That's a tally of over four a game.
Yeah, and I'm not sure how many returners they have when it comes to their defensive line. But, again, that's a point I always made, especially before Michigan played Utah last year. You know, I remember when we had Alex Sharg on the show. I mean, Alex and I were constantly talking about how good Utah's, pass rush is. I mean, it was number one last year. I don't know how many returners they have. I don't know if you know that.
They lost Nate Orchard to the NFL. He was probably their best pass rusher, really a force inside. But Hunter Dimmick is actually coming back. And last year, he had 14 and a half tackles for a loss and 10 sacks. So this is a D-line that will still be pretty good. And the defensive system isn't changing. They've very much so got a next man up mentality. And they'll be putting the pressure on Michigan's offensive line, which is pretty good in fairness. But some pressure.
And Michigan's offensive line has been just terrible. And it's so crazy to me because looking at last year and throughout the last years of the Brady Hoke era, that was one of the big criticisms of the team. I mean, that they did not have an offensive line. They had no one to protect their quarterback. I mean, I don't know how many times, especially, you know, the game that really stands out in my mind is that Michigan State and Michigan game 2 years ago in which Devin Gardner, I mean, oh my goodness, I felt bad for the kid after a while because he ate grass the entire game from the moment he stepped on the field to the moment he left the field. It was amazing to me that he walked out of that game alive. And Michigan's offensive line has not been great in recent years. And it's so surprising because Michigan has really put out impressive offensive linemen when looking at their history. So hopefully that's something they nip in the bud this upcoming year because they are known for it.
They do have a new offensive line.
They do.
Coach,
totally
and it's
new.
Supposed to be
right.
A much improved offensive line. That's why I say they're pretty good because they've got a few returning starters who might not have looked great last year, but they've got Mason Cole who did a decent job last year and he's only going to be better this year. And then they've got, I talk about that new offensive line coach. That's Tim Drevno and he's really well renowned and well respected in the college football realm. So I'd expect Michigan's offensive line to be decent, but this is also going to be their first game together under that new coaching. So we'll see if they take some time to gel as well.
I'm going to go out on a limb here. I think Michigan wins that game tomorrow night.
Okay.
I think they do. I think Michigan starts off on the right foot. I think Rudak has a great game. I think he's going to be the starter tomorrow. And I do think, you know, despite what the odds makers say, of course, the Utes, they're a very, very solid team. They have been. I mean, looking at what occurred last year in this matchup, but I just got a feeling. I think that the Harbaugh era starts off on a positive note. I'm going to take Michigan in that game.
I think it's going to be Utah. I think it's going to be 27-21. Michigan's kicking is also very suspect. They don't even have a starting kicker at this point. So I'd expect that to come back and bite them, maybe lose a couple of points opportunities because of that. And then I'd expect Utah's running game to be too good for them. I just can't see Michigan piecing it all together. There are so many moving parts going into this game. I think it'll be a decent season, but not a decent first game.
We'll break it down tomorrow, certainly, on the eve of that game, of course. All right, well, let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will be chatting with a Spartan legend. His name, of course, is Clinton Jones, Michigan State running back great, who was a part of those, back-to-back Big Ten championship teams that won a national championship as well. Clinton Jones, you do not want to miss that interview, folks. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. former Michigan State two-time All-American Clinton Jones is one of 15 players and two coaches named to the College Football Hall of Fame. How about that? Now, a three-year letterman from 1964 to 1966 for legendary head coach Duffy Daugherty. Jones accounted for 2,549 career all-purpose yards and 23 touchdowns. Jones also led the team in rushing and all-purpose yards in his final two seasons while helping the Spartans to a combined record of, get this, 19-1-1, including back-to-back Big Ten and national championships in 1965 and 66. It's a pleasure to welcome Clinton Jones to WKAR's Current Sports. Clinton, how you doing?
I'm doing wonderful, Al. How about yourself?
I am doing fantastic. Again, thanks so much for joining us today. And first off, Clinton, I want to start our convo by talking about, you know, how and when you got the call that you are going to be inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame, which, of course, that ceremony will take place in December. Where were you when you got the call, Clinton?
I was in my office actually working. I'm a chiropractor. And I got a call from John Lewandowski, and he asked me, was I sitting down? I said, no, not exactly. I'm moving around. You know, so he said, well, and then he said, well, hold on to your seat. Have a seat. Or just, and he told me a news that totally floored me out. I was, you know, I was speechless and teary-eyed and just really surprised.
Right, and I can only imagine what went through your head, Clinton, because, I mean, we're talking about the College Football Hall of Fame. And, again, I was there, actually, when you were inducted into the Michigan State University Athletics Hall of Fame back in 2012. I mean, when you compare both Hall of Fames, I mean, both incredible honors. I mean, but, I mean, this encompasses all of college football. Does this one mean more at all?
Well, it does. And of course, you got to go into the college. You know, has to be recognized by your university first. And you know, I mean, that being recognized by Michigan State, you know, in their Hall of Fame, first of all, that was kind of overwhelming honor. Because, to be very honest, I was never looking for it. I mean, it wasn't kind of on my radar. That I was never wondering, well, when am I going to be inducted into it? That really wasn't in my consciousness. Mm-hmm. And then people would bring it up to me, when are you going to be inducted? But, you know, I said, well, you know, I don't have anything to do with it. But I said, I never thought about it. So the great honor to be inducted into Michigan State's Hall of Fame. And then people said, well, now, you know, you definitely should be in the College Hall of Fame. And believe me, I was really appreciative to it. But I wasn't, you know, expecting it. And I thought maybe it could happen. As a matter of fact, it was overwhelming because I thought that the ballot was already in for 2015. I said, well, maybe I have a chance for 2016, you know. And I was telling my daughters, I said, you know, I have five daughters. I said, why don't you all go on a Facebook campaign? Because I don't do that stuff, you know. Yeah. They're young people, and then that social media. But I was joking. So my daughter, my one daughter, Tiffany, she said, well, Daddy, I don't have any money to join the National Football College board where you can get an opportunity to vote, but I'll pray for you. You know, I said, thanks.
Well, so, I'll tell you what, Clinton, her prayers worked.
Well, they sure did. They sure did, because, I mean, I was totally shocked. But I thought that all the balloting was over.
Right.
And so I was looking towards, you know, which would be 2016. But, you know, everything worked out. This is the year. This year, 2015, I've been saying it all this year and before this year. It's very, very significant for Spartan Nation.
Yeah, it certainly is, and that's a great segue into my next round of questions for you, Clinton. I want to get your thoughts on, first off, what Coach D'Antonio has been able to do throughout his tenure here as the head football coach of the Spartans, And, you know, looking at, you know, just the past 2 years here, I mean, a Rose Bowl championship. And then after that, they win the Cotton Bowl. They've been ranked as a top five college football team. You know, back-to-back years, they're a preseason top five team in the Associated Press poll this season. Talk about how Coach D'Antonio has really been able to put this program, you know, back on the map, I should say, so to speak, and really give it national prominence to where now, I mean, having a conversation of Michigan State winning a national championship does not feel far-fetched at all.
Well, it's not far-fetched in my mind at all. I'm expecting it. I'm expecting it. And I'll tell you, Mark showed me his character, what kind of person he was. When he came to Los Angeles, when he was hired, and took Bob Batiste and I to lunch and laid out his program and his mission, and I felt his heart and I felt his life. And he has just been true to his mission and just improving every year. And I knew there was something very special about him. Mm-hmm. I could just, you know, in your gut that, you know, this man is on a mission. He's driven. And so I have so much respect and admiration for him because he's a man of the people. He's a great teacher. And I was just thinking a lot about him this morning. And he feels the same way I do. Football is about life. And it's about people. And it's about a shared commitment, you know, kind of like a shared humanity where it's not, you have to unselfishly put out for the people that you are gathered together in your mission, you know. And he's a person that he's very spiritual and at the same time practical, and he shows with his life condition this things in this game that has value, you know, to these men, not only when they're on the gridiron, but when they leave the university and then the gridiron of life that we all have to do, mm-hmm. you know, he gives them, he teaches values.
Yeah.
So he's, and the other thing that he did, he married the past with the present. Now, it's very essential to have an essential understanding of the past and the superficial one. So by bringing in my generation, which is far removed from this 21st century Spartan nation, you know, it has kind of like a foundation of excellence and accomplishment that he's been able to instill in these players now. But they're not looking back, but they're actually building on the foundation that was set 50 years ago, you know. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate that. So with this administration, with Coach Mark D'Antonio and AD Mark Hollis and President Loyana K. Simon, I feel the same synergy and feeling that I felt when I was a youngster at Michigan State, and that's very remarkable. So when the season comes around, and when they've been playing over these 7 going to 8 years now, I have the same feeling, even though I don't have the capacity to go on the field, I'm on the field in terms of my heart, in terms of my determination. And this is a remarkable administration. You know,
and Clinton,
this is a different era.
Right.
But the spirit is always the same. You know, forever victorious, never be defeated, never give up. And that's the kind of spirit that Mark, with his other coaches, his other teachers, you know, everybody's supporting the program. They have that kind of determination. So it's been building like a snowball. This ball has been getting bigger and bigger and bigger each year. And so this is the breakout year.
Yeah.
And I say that unequivocally. I don't have no doubt. I have no doubt.
You think this team is going to win it all?
And yes. I have no doubt. Yeah.
I love that, Clinton. Again, folks, if you're just now joining us here on WKRS Current Sports, we are chatting with Clinton Jones, former Michigan State running back great, who will be inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame later on this year. Now, Clinton, I want to briefly chat about your time here on campus as a player? Because you just mentioned how, you know, Mark D'Antonio has done a phenomenal job at bridging the present with the past. And talking about that past, I mean, your time spent with, you know, Duffy, you know, head coach of the, you know, legendary head coach of the football team back then, you know, Gene Washington, George Webster, Bubba Smith. What was your time like here on campus, if you could summarize it really briefly for us?
If I could summarize, I'd say Duffy celebrated diversity at a time when diversity was not even on the radar. Mm-hmm. He celebrated with Pacific Islanders, Hawaii and Samoa, and players from the South. They couldn't go to school or play athletics in the schools in the South. And he brought us together from different cultures, and he created a culture of humanity with a mission.
Right.
And that's what the same thing that Mark D'Antonio's done. Duffy used to take us to win shoes in Marshall, Michigan. Mm-hmm. And we had those blazers and the berets, you know, and he brought us together. And we didn't even know the backgrounds that each other came from, because we didn't talk about the guys and talk about the situation in the South. And we came from it was a whole paradigm shift, experiences that we had never even considered before. We came together, and we're only focused on one thing, and that was winning. When that freshman class came in 1963, we made up our mind that we could compete with anybody, and we weren't even able to play any games. When we went up to Chuck Lewis and Dewey Lincoln, we said, we're going to kick their butts, you know. So we're here, you know. And they felt our spirit. They felt our challenge. And then we moved into our sophomore year. It was just a matter of building and building. So that same synchronicity, that same, spirit that we had during that time, I saw the same thing building with these 21st century Spartans.
Now, Clinton, can you talk about how Duffy Daugherty, of course, you know, really changed the paradigm of not just, you know, college sports, but sports in general? When you hint on recruiting blacks down south to here to the north, I mean, how did that really change the paradigm of where sports was headed?
Well, see, that's the thing about it. He was a pioneer, and he was thinking about that. He was doing that long before it was fashionable. It was like a salmon swimming upstream. That's a good example. Swimming upstream, swimming against the tide of segregation, mm-hmm. and separatism, and the idea that black players could only do certain positions, and which is only based on ignorance, you know. Mm-hmm. But he brought that in, and so did Biggie Monk. As a matter of fact, you know, you have to think Michigan State University itself brought about a whole paradigm shift in the whole country. That's the thing about it. Michigan State there in East Lansing, that Michigan State University was doing something on a scale that no other university that I know of, a state university, was doing. You know, mm-hmm. It wasn't just an exceptional thing. It was a culture there at Michigan State.
Right.
And that's something to really, you know, I delved into the history. I started studying, went online and started studying about President Hanna, Biggie, and also like Duffy, and I started looking at, you know, President Louanna Simon, you know, which is another first, you know, the first woman president of the university. My mentor said that the 21st century is the century of the spirit, the century of women, and the century of people that have suffered the most breaking through, you know. Mm-hmm. When you look at it, you know, it's been pretty much the black and brown population, but in reality, humanity is one family. So that's been this one familyness, regardless of the diversity of the different colored flowers and scents. That's the culture that Michigan State has. And so once the community gets in, you know, with the same spirit as the athletic department and all the sports, but especially in football, because the representative of that, like, eternal struggle in life that we go through. Mm-hmm. But because we have faith, you know, we can stride, you know, in peace and security, knowing that we can accomplish whatever we want to do. So that's you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, certainly.
That's been a legacy. That's been a legacy of Michigan State, and it's just a matter of time till we have the people that show up. So this administration showed up 50 years later, just as before. So we've come full circle, and it's at a time that's very much needed. We need positive stories and victories so that we can show the world, you know, how wonderful America is, how wonderful, you know, the opportunities are here in spite of the obstacles. So it's because of the obstacles that, you know, that we were able to turn poison into medicine in our generation 50 years ago. Now this generation is doing the same thing now.
That is so
true. So there are a lot of pessimists that don't believe that, you know, we all know what's going on in society today, but we're changing that by the causes that we're making. And that's what I like about Mark D'Antonio. He's cause-oriented.
Right.
He's cause-oriented. And because he believes in the law of cause and effect and that you reap what you sow, he teaches that.
Right.
So it's no accident that we're where we're at now.
That is so true, Clinton. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to checking out the really just remarkable project that, of course, your former teammate Gene Washington and his daughter Maya have put together, entitled Through the Banks of the Red Cedar, as that will be debuted right here on Michigan State's campus next week, Thursday. So definitely looking forward to checking out that documentary and really taking a firsthand look of what took place back in the 60s and how, again, as you just so eloquently stated, Clinton, how Michigan State was really a pioneer in really pushing for diversity in sports here and beyond sports here right at Michigan State. So, Clinton, before we get you out of here, I really want to talk about, first off, concussions in the world of football, because it's a conversation that seems to be getting more and more traction as time goes on. I actually checked out a trailer for actor Will Smith and his new movie, which is entitled Concussion, in which he plays the doctor who actually discovered CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, which is caused by constant banging of the brain through physical force over time. And it's really interesting because it's going to open the door in conversation for many people out there, and specifically parents out there, when making the decision of allowing their little one to go out there and play the game or not. How do you think this is going to, you know, what we know about concussions and its possible effects later on down the line, how do you think this is going to change the game of football itself?
Well, you know, earlier when I mentioned about changing poison into medicine, this is a case of that. This is another like challenge for football, soccer, and sports, and boxing and things like that. And it's a very serious matter, and parents have to give a lot of attention to whether they want to take that. They want to risk their children going out, putting themselves at risk. But, and to be very frank, life is risky. But, you know, there's been something that's been developed for quite a number of years. Now, I have to tell you, Al, I knew about this in 1980. Because as a chiropractor, I mentored with a doctor, Dr. Lowell Ward, and he was telling me through his research and the x-rays that he took of me, he told me about my own self and consequences if I didn't have the proper type of care to reverse this process. Mm-hmm. So the main thing is, well, what can you do about it? Well, by the advancements made in neuroscience, we now know that the thing that we thought before, that you can regenerate highly developed cells, it's not true. So it's going to be a challenge, but the thing of it is, we have to keep things transparent, and look at how we can advance the game safely without taking away the aggressiveness, because the football is an aggressive sport. It has to be played aggressively. But I think it'll open people's eyes where before, self was kept in the closet. And, you know, at certain times, and, you know, if this had come out 30 years ago without having the information that we have today in neuroscience, people may, you know, the game wouldn't be what it is today. But it's a great game because, to me, it's very much about life. And I know, being in a chiropractor and having studied the mind for over 45 years, because I've always been intrigued about the mind, I know that there's definitely, this is a challenge that we can definitely overcome. As a matter of fact, I'm on the board of directors of an organization that's started by former players, professional players, called the Retired Players Congress. And one of the things that we're doing as a nonprofit is to start a flag, a touch football, to teach kids the fundamentals at an early age, so they're not going into combat or hitting heads from 5 to 12 years to 12 years or so, to teach them how to play the game correctly and protect themselves and still be aggressive. So this will be something that's going to have a lot of controversy. But the thing of it is, you know, every culture has something like this. Even primitive cultures have some type of contact or battle. And what it does, it's a way of actually, like, humanizing them. Even a martial arts is combat. But the thing is, in martial arts, is to train yourself so that you don't have to fight. So I think that we definitely will change the culture of the game, but it won't take away the intensity and the joy of it.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
It's out of adversity, that's where you can really grow.
Right.
And that's what football is about, turning adversity into opportunity. So I think that we don't have to worry about it, but the things deal with responsibly and, like, it's not going to go away.
Right.
And if I have all girls, but if I had a son, he probably wouldn't be playing tackle football until maybe a junior high school or high school.
Yeah.
And from my opinion, but I would want him to learn the basics. Now, I myself learned my skills playing touch football in the schoolyard, because we were playing on asphalt and concrete.
Right.
So you can't tackle on that, but we learned our skills, you know, how to dodge and block and, you know, do those kind of things. So I think that I'm very positive about the future. As a matter of fact, my wife and I are in that movie, Concussions, as extras.
Really? Get out of here.
Yeah.
You held that to the very end, huh?
Yeah, and that's something. Yeah, we're in. I don't know if they're going to show our part, but we're in there as, like, I know they're going to show my wife's part. She's in there. We're sitting in the congregation at the cemetery.
Oh, wow. How did that come about, Clinton?
Well, you know, they had some prayers out here in California. They wanted to be part of it. And
right.
So we said, okay, yeah. So they had some NFL players. And so my wife and I, we went over there.
Right, right.
And that was a place in Oxnard in Ventura County in California. It's not too far from where we live. So I'm anxious to see it. Maybe I'll even see it this evening. And it's something that's really needed, you know,
yeah,
to open people's eyes. But we don't need to fear, you know.
Right.
The last
right.
thing, you know, this game is a great game. To me, it's the greatest game about life. There's so many things that it teaches young people, you know. I got one grandson. He's not interested in football. I got five daughters, five granddaughters, another granddaughter on the way, and only one grandson. But he's just 10 years old, but he's kind of a pacifist.
Yeah, yeah. No, I hear you. Football might not be his game.
It might not be his game, but that's okay, you know.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, when I started out, Al, my first year, I was 13 years old, my first time playing organized football. I wasn't very good, and I was playing tackle. And I had a helmet that had no chin strap. It was a leather helmet, actually, that my grandmother got me because she was working for some people in the suburbs.
Mm-hmm.
That was my first helmet. And when I got in the ninth grade, I played 5 seconds of the last game of the season, the last final, the last 5 seconds of the game, and we are losing 50-0. So I guess the coach thought it was safe to put me into the game. Mm-hmm. I said, hell, I'm going to play this game. But it was up to
yeah.
So then my blood came back out my sophomore year, went out for the JV, and I had a coach. He let me play more. Then my junior year, I didn't still make first string, but I played my senior year. I got hurt twice and only played 2 games my senior year.
Wow.
So for me to go to Michigan State, you see, I know what it's like to come from the bottom. I didn't have a lot of accolades in football. I wasn't highly sought after in football. I excelled in track, but my love is something about I love the contact and getting out there. Because mm-hmm. my first sport was boxing, and I started doing that at 9 years old.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
And I mean, I was boxing at 9 against kids 13 and 14 and being punched in the head and stuff like that. And it's,
yeah.
So I guess I've been a Spartan all my life.
Yeah, you certainly have. And I tell you what, Clinton, we wish you – and I want to know, will you be in town next week on Thursday?
Yes, I will. I'll be there.
That'll be great because we look forward to chatting with you. I'll be there, and I look forward to seeing you in person. And I want to give a tremendous thanks for you joining me on today's show. That was tremendous insight. One and the only, Clinton Jones, former MSU running back. Great. Clinton, thanks so much, and I'll see you next week.
Hey, Al, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity for the interview. And will you do something for me? Text me a picture of you.
Yeah, will do. Will do. I will do that. I got your number, so I'll do that after we get off the air, Clinton.
Hey, fantastic, Al.
All right. Thanks a lot, Clinton.
Hey, Al.
Yeah.
Go green. Go green.
There you go. Preach it, baby. This Friday, man, it's going to be on.
That's right. It's on now.
All right. Thanks a lot, Clinton. Appreciate it.
You're welcome, Al. Bye-bye.
All right. How about that, Isaac? Clinton Jones, great insight. I mean, you know, one thing that really stands out about Clinton is how passionate he is about the game, about this university, and just about life, you know? And, you know, I remember the first time I interviewed Clinton when I was a reporter at Channel 6 when he got inducted into the Michigan State Athletics Hall of Fame. Another thing that stood out, I mean, Clinton can talk. I mean, he's got stories for days. So, you know, great insight, though, and I look forward to seeing him next week. But that was fantastic.
Yeah, it certainly was. I love the stories about all his family's involvement in football, and because that's a question we've been holding true throughout our time at Current Sports, the concussion issue and things like that. I thought that was such a great answer to that.
Yeah, and he's got all daughters. He's got all daughters. So, I mean, you know, it doesn't really, you know, rain on his responsibility too much, but, of course, with his grandkids later on in life. But yeah, man, Clinton, he can talk, man. I mean, wow, that was a pretty hefty interview, but we appreciate Clinton and his time. But, unfortunately, we have come to that point in the hour where we have to say goodbye. So, again, folks, join us tomorrow. We've got a great show in store for you. We give you a sneak peek of this afternoon's Current Sports TV taping with Curtis Blackwell. You don't want to miss that, of the MSU football team. You don't want to miss that, and we'll have a ton more to talk about. But, again, as always, folks, take care. Have a fantastic afternoon. Thanks so much to Clinton Jones for joining me on today's show. You have been listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Be easy, people.